We are launching one of the largest agri-tech accelerators in Europe. So we have taken a place of 15 hectares with around 1,000 square meters of buildings and facilities, only to focus on agriculture technologies.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Halcyon Entrepreneurs Podcast. This episode, we have a discussion with Gianandrea Giamanco, who's left a very lucrative career in finance to work on issues of wealth distribution and sustainability. He's done this through founding Futura, a think tank and incubator dedicated to working on major global issues like education, economic models, decision making, and impact-driven innovation. Feel free to learn more about his project at fvtura.com. Now on to our discussion.
For this year, we're focusing on creating new economic models, so 2020-2021, and to basically invite experts, financial experts, economists, to start to create better models compared to the current ones. Because, as you know, capitalism has some very good points. Competition helped increase in the amount of technologies, of innovation, of corporations. But on the other side, it's becoming unsustainable because it has four or five mechanisms within the system that are they're not good for the long term. For example, unlimited wealth accumulation or problems related to inheritance. Or even the free market, it has problems because in times of crisis, as we can see with COVID, a free market allows people in the real estate market to even double charge the price if they want to, because they say, who knows, people needs accommodations for COVID quarantine. And you see cities that all of a sudden double up their prices. Or on the other side, there are mortgages and loans that are kind of frozen. And people cannot buy houses anymore, so you have more people going into rental, and those people are exploited. There was an article from the BBC a few days ago, and this from our report from UBS that shows that during the COVID pandemic, billionaires saw their fortune rising by 27%. I mean, that's about $10 trillion. And it's a lot. It's a lot, especially because people were starving, people were suffering, and some other people made a fortune out of it, which is kind of unfair, but it's a built-in mechanism. It's no one's fault. It's just that it was built in this way. So yeah, this is somehow 2020, next 2 years goal. Then for the next 10 years, because that's something that I would like to share with you guys in case you want to become entrepreneurs, we always tend to have 10 years planning, because you realize that it's good to have very short term planning, but if you truly want to make an impact, that just comes with the habits, with routine, with a compounding approach. Like impact or even a startup, it doesn't just pop up overnight. Yeah, it can happen in lucky cases, but in most of the cases, it's really a lot of work, and it's really a lot of missing the word, guys. Sorry, I've been in Italy too much already. But yeah, it's about being there every day and improving little by little by little. So our 10 years plan is to create a socio-economic movement. We want to create a full-fledged ecosystem that would allow people to work, create, and live in an ecosystem while creating impact. There are so many young people that they have talents, they have skills, but they don't have resources, and they're forced to do jobs that they don't like, that they didn't even study for it, just to make a living out of it. And it's a tremendous waste, because those talented young people could shape the world in so much better ways, but they can't, because they can't afford it. So we truly want to create a movement that would empower people with all the tools and resources to really use their skills and ideas at their best. So that's our long-term plan.
Yeah, thanks so much. Sounds great. I'm taking a look at like the website and all that. Does anyone have any questions about the project and more specifically? I mean, I can get back to my questions, but if anyone wants to like ask about anything in particular, I think maybe more specific stuff. Yeah, Simone, you want to go ahead?
Yeah. Okay. Salve. Prima di tutto, grazie per la chiamata. Yeah, going back to English now. I was wondering whether you could be a little bit more specific about the projects that you're involved in right now. And one thing that I was wondering what are your ties to Singapore? Like, how is that this happened? You met with Abdul. Are you working on any project specific to Singapore or East Asia?
Well, I went to Singapore from, by the way, buongiorno, Anna. Thanks. I noticed from the name, I thought you were from Italy, from North Italy, probably.
Yeah, that I need to see.
And, I went to Singapore when I was working in finance, and I moved from Shanghai to Singapore. So I haven't been in Italy for almost 11 years, quite a while. Anyway. And first I went to the US, to North America, and then I moved back to Europe. I've been between London and Malta for a while, then moved into Dubai and then in Shanghai and last in Singapore. And during that period, I was opening offices in different countries. So building up clients, team, and I was a CEO of this financial company. So I had to move quite a bit. I went into Singapore because, yeah, I was working in finance, and that was one of the best places for that. Lots of things happening, lots of events, people really excited about creating projects, doing investments. And also Singapore, I think, is extremely business-friendly. Can't think of many other countries in the world that are as friendly, as transparent, as easy to create projects there. You might be aware of it, how hard it would be in other parts of Southeast Asia, for example, to create projects, and corruptions and bribing, so all the bad things that happens every day. And then when I went out of finance, I said, well, I'm here, I have a network here, let's try to create impact from here. And sadly, that was a strategic mistake, because I realized that the living costs in Singapore are so expensive that people can't even afford to think about helping other people, because their life is already so challenging over there that if they stop 6 months to say, I want to create a project from nothing, and they fail, then, I mean, their life and their career will be messed up. On the other side, you have people that could afford that, but they are so wealthy that probably they don't even care about solving problems, because they don't live it in their skins. They don't know what does it mean struggling to reach the end of the month. They don't know what does it mean starvation or living in difficult life conditions. So I realized that, which, you know, is not good or bad. It's just the way it is. And it was anyway a very interesting experience on that. And I also believe that there are so many technologies and there are so many people in Singapore that want to make a change. It's just that there is no ecosystem for that. Over there, I spoke with around 150 between VCs, incubators, and accelerators. I went to speak with the CEOs directly of these companies, with the founders, to truly understand where could they be our synergies, what could we do together. I even spoke with the head of sustainability of Temasek. And what I realized is that there is no scheme in place for truly making impact investing. Most of these VCs and incubators, and not just in Singapore, almost anywhere in the world, they are just covering with impactful and sustainability branding somehow their companies, but in reality, they're just looking for profits. They're looking for profits with a marketing edge, which is a sustainability or impact. And so, yeah, I mean, without digressing too much, that's how I ended up in Singapore and And that was our experience with this organization, this mission there. I mean, also very good experiences. I've met great people, friends that are now are here with us in Tuscany from Singapore. So, yeah. If you have any other questions, guys, really shoot it. And also, I would like maybe to understand more about what you are studying. I mean, what is your current focus, guys, and if I can share something about it.
Hi. Yeah, I think just to follow up on Simone's question, what are some of the projects that are you're working on? Like, could you give us some sort of an overview on the you know, like what the project is about and what it's trying to achieve?
Absolutely. You know? So I could share maybe a couple of projects that are completely different from each other, but they have the same underline, which is creating impact. One project is called Next Billion Jobs, and is a platform, is a non-profit platform that helps people getting upskilled and reskilling an entire workforce for the future jobs that are coming. You see, in today's internet world, where everything, almost everything could be done remotely, most of the players and the platforms in the gig economy, in the freelancer economy, in the jobs economy, are platforms that are mostly there to somehow to be transactional. You get there, you're looking for something, you get it done, you pay that $20, whatever it is, and that's it. Everyone walks away. Most of the people are not even satisfied because, as you know, if you pay for something $20, you can't expect a $2,000 result. And what we realize is that there is no long-term planning, neither for the jobs and neither for the skills of the people working in these economies. And the markets and the trends change so fast that often people, when they realize it, that something is happening, it's already too late. And it's basically, they have to keep chasing the trends, the markets, and so on. So Next Billion Jobs is a platform that, first of all, has no transaction fee. So you come there, you put $100, and you can utilize it for like 1,000 times, and there will still remain $100. And that's one of the things that I realized with finance is that our life is full of hidden fees and hidden costs. And these costs really damage the liquidity of the market. Because if you keep drawing away liquidity in a form of small commission, in a matter of time, there will be no liquidity anymore, unless you find constantly new people to inject new liquidity. But the more you grow, the more people you need. And basically, it becomes what we are seeing in even in states. You see large countries that they are ending up not having liquidity, and they have to keep printing it and printing it, like the United States are doing now. Also because there are not only hidden costs, but there is corruption, there is money laundering, where basically you have cash disappearing from the system. Some people put it in offshore bank accounts, some people stock it in cash. Anyway, the liquidity gets drawn away from the market. And the same applies in this gig economy and jobs platform, where commissions are not even that little. We are not talking about 2%. We are talking about something like 25%. 25% means that in 4 or 5 transactions, if you started with $100, you will be left with 15 or with a fraction of what you started. So first of all, this platform has no transaction fee. And then it matches education with jobs. So people can take courses and they have an ROI, and not an ROI in cash, but ROI in time, where they say, I can invest 2 weeks, and these 2 weeks of time will lead me to this type of jobs. And on the other side, we are partnering up with large companies to understand what is the job market, but not now, in 6 months, in 1 year, even in 5 years, so that we can start to train people for those jobs. And that's something that is really missing, unfortunately. And you see millions of young people studying something that then has no jobs. On the other side, they don't study things that could really have a future, jobs or an impact as well. And I could give an example, and then I can connect it to the other project that we are launching here, which is bee harvesting. Like people, bee cares, bee taking cares. Yeah, sorry guys, I'm really losing my English here. So people that are
beekeepers. Beekeepers, right?
Beekeepers, that's the one. Apologize, guys. I really have to come back there before I start to speak only in Italian and only with gestures. Beekeepers, yeah, it's something truly important, and almost nobody teaches you how to do that, but it's really necessary for agricultures and also for our survivability as human beings. And that's something that is not taught. It's not taught at school. There is no online courses for that, or very little, very scattered. And that's just one example. Another one could be waste management. People don't know how to do waste management, and Singapore is fine, Europe is fine, but think about Indonesia, for example, where if you go in Bali, you see trash being burned in the streets. And that's because the government does not have a proper waste management plan in place. They don't have enough resources. And on the other side, people are not educated on how to do that and how they can do maybe improving or doing trash collection or selection, plastic, aluminum, and so on. And so what we want to create is also a place where people can learn this for the futures and then putting it in place. Okay. Not just to say because it's ethical, but it really gives the liquidity into the market for allowing this kind of circular economy. Because if you keep taking, at some point there will be nothing left. And we are seeing it. I mean, you can see it in so many places, in so many platforms, and even in so many countries, where basically they're running out of liquidity and they don't know what to do. So that's my example. The other one, which is a completely opposite example, because it's all offline, but is connected to the beekeepers, is the AgriTech project. So here in Tuscany, since we are here because of COVID, but and that's because food and food production creates 24 to 25% of the global pollution and wastage. You can think about the plastics when you have the greenhouses, you can think about the pesticides, the chemicals that goes into the soil, into the air that you breathe and that you eat. And we know that if we want to create an impact for the long term, that is one of the key areas that we need to improve. Because at the moment in agriculture, they are working about 500 million people on this planet, and is one, if not the most important industry for our survivability as a species, as a race, and also as part of a larger natural ecosystem. And if we don't improve that we are a little bit doomed. And what is that in many countries where there are not happening with pesticides, with antibiotics, with ways that things are done, and that then we eat, basically, because even if food is produced in South America or in Central Africa, it most likely ended up in our tables in more industrialized countries. And that's the beekeepers part, because we are having also that here. We are starting to experiment with that as well. So
yeah, thanks. That's
to give you a couple of projects ideas.
Thanks for sharing. I think the work that you all are doing, it sounds great, and I think it really helps, I think, to your overall goal of kind of building a new economic model in a sense. Another question, I don't want to take up all the time. So moving forward, do you all have any plans to implement any sort of projects in, say, Singapore or Asia or yeah?
We do have team members that are still in Singapore, so we might try there as well. It's a tricky situation, because you see, when you talk about impact, you need to find people that are interested into doing that, like genuinely, because that's something that you only can do if you're genuine about it. Otherwise, it's messed up. Fortunately, the ecosystem there is built in a different way, because you have investors that are pushing VCs and family office and funds to invest for profits. So the problem is not even the VC itself or the incubator, it's the people that are giving the resources behind that. At the end of the year, they go there and they say, okay, how much did you make for me this year? And if they didn't make something interesting, they will pull off the capital and investing into a VC that is more financially competitive. But yeah, certainly I would love to. I have many friends there, and I would really like to create this impact everywhere because it's necessary in Europe, in Asia, in America. And we were also thinking about Vietnam as a next step, because we see a very young population. I've been working in Ho Chi Minh, for a while. And yeah, I mean, you have 100 million people with the average age of, I think, less than 24, 22, which is a lot of energy. And it's a market that can still be shaped into something more impactful, because it's not mature enough. And when things are mature, it's already a little bit too late to change it, because you have to put effort in destroying it the old way and then create a new one. While if you catch them halfway, you can still create a better path and it's more energy efficient. But yeah, I mean, I still think that we could do things in Singapore, especially events for investors, maybe for creating more awareness about sustainability and impact, ensuring that yes, you can earn a little bit less, but you can earn better, and you can make it in a win-win situation so that every part involved wins.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. I think that makes so much sense. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there could be a lot of potential. You mentioned about Vietnam, how it's a growing market, and there's lots of rooms for you all to implement the ethos of the projects there. Yeah.
Pleasure, guys. And again, I mean, for me, it's all about inspiring. And even if one of you starts to make a change or is already making a change, that's would be a really, really fantastic thing. So I say thanks to you guys, because I like that. It gives me energy, it gives me motivation to keep doing things for good.
Hi.
I know you.
I think it's getting in the loop. We're good? Yeah. my question is regarding, for example, how you turn all these like good causes and novel causes into like something and not necessarily profitable but like sustainable, that you can leave it running and that your initial intervention can just like give it enough boost, like keep the momentum, right? Sometimes like keeping it from nonprofit to a social enterprise or things like that. Yeah, I just wanted to hear your thoughts on like the on that regard, like
the financial sustainability.
Exactly. How do you make these causes sustainable and to be able to have enough momentum to sustain themselves?
That's a great point, and I think it's one of the most challenging points, because first of all, when you start this process of embodiment where you really say, I don't care about money, I don't care about profits, at least on the personal level, you start to see the world in a different way, because all of a sudden competitors becomes potential collaborators. There is no more competition. It becomes all about collaboration. But still, financial sustainability for the specific project is necessary, unfortunately, because in today's world, if you need something and you don't have resources for it, that's going to be a little bit challenging. So there are two aspects of this. One aspect is being able to generate revenues in a sustainable way by creating products that people are happy to buy at a better price than what they find into the market. I can say in the agri-tech project, for example, you can sell the vegetables, you can sell the food, and you can do it at a better price than if you do it in a supermarket, just because you don't have that long supply chain Basically, you are the direct seller. So you're doing good, you're creating sustainable food, you're not using pesticides, so you are saving on that. And on the other side, you're giving someone a product at a better price. So it's a win-win-win in that sense. On the other side, what you can do is working with crowdfunding platforms, with volunteers. You can give more shares of your projects because all of a sudden you don't care about profits. You care about making it growing, making it collaborative. And here in Europe, you can find many vehicles for that. I can say just from Italy side, and I think any other European countries has different models. For just nonprofits type, you have 4 or 5 different types of nonprofits, depending on which schemes you need. On the other side, you can create cooperatives. And cooperatives, there are 7 types of cooperatives. There are social cooperatives, there are agricultural cooperatives. And there are legal structures meant to be for collaboration with super accessible tax systems. For example, the one that we are utilizing here is an agricultural cooperative. And Italy normally has almost 60% taxes. But in the agricultural cooperative, the tax is 4%, just 4. At the end of the year, whatever you make, you pay 4%. And that shows that somehow, if you truly want to go into that path, you can find ways on one side to save costs. And all these margins that you save here and there, it makes a tremendous impact on the end product. So you can create something better at a cheaper price, and it's win-win and making it sustainable. On the other side, we are adventuring in the concept of distributed ownership. So in the case of the gig economy platform, Next Billion Jobs, we are trying to do something experimental, which is making each user and each freelancer a shareholder and partner of that platform. Now think about Facebook. Facebook has 2 billion users and a very, very small number of shareholders. And that's affecting the platform itself because every decision is taken in the interest of the investors, ultimately. Even those that look connected to the community, in reality, they're just marketing approaches to grow the community, to make it more profitable in a way or another. And we can see this by the increasing number of ads in those platforms, all the things that they have been doing. What we would like to see is large corporations, large projects that starts in a different way. So in the case of a social network as big as Facebook, seeing something that is owned by 2 billion people, because it's not only about the financial sustainability of it, but it's also about the control and decision-making. We would like to see control being shared among the people that are affected, because in the case of large platforms like that, they are affecting our life in so many different ways, and not only directly, but also indirectly. I mean, think about the US election. Everyone knows how much the social networks have played a major role, if not the main role, into the US elections. And the problem is that when there is financial interest and control only from a bunch of people, that you might see things happening over and over again as they're happening right now. So on the other side, as I was saying, on Next Billion Jobs, we are trying the distributed ownership approach. And that would allow people to say, okay, I can spend on this. And not only I spend less, but I become part of it. So it's like so much a massive incentive for people to join and even to work for it. I mean, think about working for Fiverr or working for that platform, Next Billion Jobs, where Next Billion Jobs gives you not only the same salary, potentially, but it gives you also a double up amount of shares. So let's say you get $2,000 in cash and you get $2,000 of shares, and that's already $4,000. And this is because that company is not interested in holding their control and their ownership, but actually they want to spread it across the community. So creating large community projects. And that's something that we are experimenting. It's not easy, I would say, because people are not used to it. And even on the legal side, it's not easy because many countries have limitations. For example, in Singapore, you can have between 25 to 49 shareholders at most in your startup. Like, can't even think about a distributed organization with 2 billion people. It's just not built in. In most of the cases, you have to go IPO. And if you go IPO, you're back into the same system, into the same market. So yeah, also on the legality is something that is challenging in different countries. But yeah, that's the financial sustainability of it, if that answered your question.
Yeah, of course, any of these approaches can have its limitations because it comes like usually private investment. Do you guys could, or like, what would be the role, or what has been the role, for example, with the governo de Italia? I don't know, like, do you guys work alongside some causes that I'm pretty sure that could help and that are in the interest of the government to, like,
yes,
to fund? So, like, what would be the role in that? And, like, how do you guys approach?
So, in Europe, mostly the Central European, the European Union has funds that they provide for innovation or for social causes, or even just purely innovation. And that's a lot of resources. It's like we're talking into billions of euros. And Italy is the third country in Europe with the highest amount of those resources. And it's also the country in Europe that is not able to spend it. Last year, they had to send it back into the European Union because they couldn't spend it. They didn't have enough innovation and startups to actually put these resources. And the terms of those investments are usually very interesting. In this case, we are talking with Invitalia, which is the government branch for innovation and startup investments. And their terms is either they give you an investment, which is 60% that you don't have to give it back. So they give you 1 million euros, 600K, you can utilize it and you don't have to give it back. And 400K, you have to give it back at zero interest in 8 years, which is really interesting. I mean, they give you 1 million and it's basically, you have quite an amount of resources to create projects. Or the other side, if you want something a little bit bigger, let's say 10 million, 20 million euros, they give it to you at 0% interest. And again, you have to give it back in 8 years. You take 20, you give back 20. It's incomparable because no other investor, no other private investor would say that to you. Like, yeah, take my money and give it back to me in 8 years. I don't want any profit out of it. But I know that Singapore has a lot of investments for innovations as well. I think so many governments have schemes for that. So yeah, if that answers to you, what I would add is that it's not easy. Unfortunately, it's extremely challenging to talk with governments because the amount of due diligence and bureaucracy, sometimes it can really be unsustainable. And that is one of the limitations. If the governments had in place better schemes for innovation, there will be so much more things happening.
The reason why I guess startups raise the capital, right? Because if the company, if the investors, they own the shares, and I guess there's more impetus amongst them to kind of expand and really reach the scale. But your idea of Facebook was kind of like decentralized, then expanding might have been a bigger issue because there would have been less effort to do that, right?
I actually think the opposite. I mean, if you have seen what happened with cryptocurrencies, for example, it was something that was decentralized and distributed. I'm not a big fan of it right now because 95% of them have been utilized just for speculation. And that's unfortunately the main reason why people are attracted into it. But still, you see things like Ethereum in a couple of years raising now a market cap of $40 billion. I mean, that's a lot of cash there, a lot of resources. So if Ethereum was a social network, for example, it could have been massive. Or we have seen the case with Telegram. Telegram has done a private ICO and they've raised 1.4 billion, which is unbelievably high compared to any normal startup or even to compared to other messaging apps. In that case, WhatsApp is the opposite, because WhatsApp is burning money. They have spent into it. I mean, they've acquired it. So I actually believe that if people switch their mindset into decentralized and fractional ownership, which our generation understands already better, because most of the people our age, they can't afford to own a house. Some can't even afford to own a car. And so we are forced somehow to go into fractional ownership as the only way to have a little piece of stability or a little piece of something. And again, I mean, if you had a choice, if you had Facebook and another social network that says you are in control, you are the owner, you decide if you want to put ads or not, and if you don't want to put ads, we can go for donations, for things like Patreons and so on. And you get the same, but without all the nasty things behind, in that sense. And also on the opposite side, yes, it's true that startups can raise and scale fast, but most of them also fail very fast, even after raising. Because often they don't reach a critical mass, or they have unsustainable financial plans, or they only rely on funding and resources, which nowadays is not enough, because there is always someone else more funded than you, with more resources, with more capitals, even with governments behind. I mean, you see in the high level of technological companies, I mean, they have governments behind, either in the US or in China or in Korea or in other parts. So I think it's changing the way of creating projects, moving away from being highly funded from those projects that actually have very large communities. I think nowadays, actually, community is more important than funding. Yeah, I mean, everybody can have 200K behind in a way or another through accelerator VCs. But if instead you have 2 million users or 2 million followers, even on Instagram, on YouTube, it's so much different. Right? It's so much more powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you definitely sold me on that. Because even like Facebook, say like they have 2 billion users, but their revenue is about 70 billion, right? So I mean, that effectively means about if everyone contributes like $3 a month, like they could get rid of the ads and like become like a total, yeah, what you mentioned, yeah.
And not only, I mean, they could be venturing more into, they're trying to go into Facebook jobs, into Facebook marketplace. They even tried to create their own currency. But there is a big issue that is also trust. And many people don't really trust Facebook with their own personal, really, really personal data. I mean, nowadays public pictures and videos or stories are public, but you wouldn't put your private stuff into Facebook because data breach, because you don't even know who is behind seeing those things or reselling it or reselling those data to thousands of companies. So yeah, they could make more, they could be better. And not only, they could listen to their community. And that's one of the biggest problems from those large corporations, is that they don't listen. You have 2 billion users and they could decide the way Facebook could evolve. They could say, I don't know, we need a video call, better video call quality, or we need a system that makes us meet in real life because we are tired of just scrolling posts. And not only, I mean, I don't know if some of you have seen The Social Dilemma on Netflix, is very nice. Not only those platforms are selling you ads, but they're trying to change your opinion based on the interest of the highest bidder. And you have people paying millions of dollars to show you little posts or advertisements that try to change your mind on buying something or appreciating something or voting for something else. So all these nasty things, which are extremely dangerous. I mean, you see the damages caused by echo chambers. see nationalist parties gaining more and more power, people becoming more racist, people believing in flat earth, in things that has been like proven millions of times, just because the echo chambers effect. And that echo chamber effect is built in to make you stick into those platforms and scroll there and stay there. So again, you wouldn't see all these things if it was community owned. I don't want to take too long about it, and I truly get passionate on it, but I think it's endless, the possible positive potential of it as well, compared to just funding.
Yeah, I think a lot of us would want to get involved with what you're doing, because I mean, generally, like, I mean, like the campus environment and like and the whole curriculum we have here is generally like just entirely centered on like impact and like thinking more about like lifelong learning and improvement towards these like goals and all that. So I think how do you think we could go about that? Like, what do you guys have, like a membership thing?
Well, if you want, you can join us on Discord. I can share links with you to start to take action, and that would be great. Membership? Not really. We have groups and we have group chats like Discord. We are building our own platform for that, so that there will be no ads, no things anymore. A really clean place without distractions from actually truly creating impact. And also, we are launching a global challenge for this year. So this the next 12 months, with awards in June, which is for creating new economic models. So this global challenge is for every entrepreneur or for every person that wants to create something better or upgrade capitalism. So coming up with solutions with startups, like in the sharing economy, for example, in the circular economy or digital currencies, or anything that could allow this younger generation to somehow build a parallel system that is more online. Because nowadays with the internet, there are no more the physical barriers that we had 20 years ago. And all of a sudden, I mean, from Singapore, from Italy, from South America, from Africa, almost everybody our age is trying to get connected into the internet. And many of us don't even recognize ourselves into a flag or into a country. Yeah, I mean, I was born in Italy, but do I feel Italian? No, not really. I mean, I feel human being. And traveling so much, you try to take from every culture. I mean, I've been 5 years in Singapore. I've taken a lot from it as a person. So I really believe that with these global challenges, we can really come together and say, let's create something better and let's start utilizing it, because today, well, we can. And then if you want to join projects, you can join as a project member, as a project leader, even as a mentor, because any of us can teach about something. I mean, think about cryptocurrencies. They have been there for just a few years. Anybody that is 24 years old can be already a mentor, and knowing it more than a person that has been in finance for like 20 years. So there's really a lot of things. If you really want to take action, we can do amazing stuff, guys.
When you're working with a team, when you're working with for a cause, what is something that you're looking for in them?
Like in terms of individual skills, I would say commitment. That in my experience is the truly hardest thing to find, but finding the commitment into helping other people, that's the hardest one to find, because, you know, like knowledge can be shared, experiences can be made, but if the people don't have the commitment behind that, you can't teach that, or you can't really share about it. Courage is another thing, because in this world, it's really easy to get overwhelmed by the government, by the family that tells you you cannot do things are the way they are. one of the things feeling is deeply, and this is the way it is. I mean, Simone, you might know it. They say, è così, it means, is the way it is. And it's not easy to find people that have the courage to say, no, it's not. It doesn't have to be like this. It can be improved. Again, if you find a very small number of people, and I can tell you, statistically, it's about 3% of a community change in an entire country, because that 3% have family and friends. So, yeah, courage and commitment. That those are the two best things. Anything else can be learned very fast, actually. Guys, if you join Discord, then we can take it from there. And again, you can reach out to me directly. Like, if you really want to take action or start a project or even being part of a project, even 1 hour a week, there is always something to do.